This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foam and Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Locksat Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Filming Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday.
Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the MHA studios here in Poughkeepsie, and we got a great episode for you guys today. Also happy to have a friend back onto this. We were saying before we officially got started that my background is changing every single time we meet up, from the radio station to my family room to now this studio. Who knows what it's going to look like the next time that we have her on, but we have her on here and now. With us today, we have Executive Director of the Mid-Hudson Library System, Rebecca Smith-Aldrich, here to talk to us about the Tempestry Project. If you're not familiar with what that is or what that all means, don't worry, we'll get into it. It's a fascinating culmination of art, data, community, environmental studies. There's so much that is wrapped up into this, and I'm excited to get into it with her today. So without any further ado, Rebecca, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Connor. Thanks for having me. You know, you're saying like you're in a different spot every time, but your attitude is always in the right spot as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, why, thank you. Much appreciated. And I know that I made a reference to this the last time that you were on, but I have to just point out the Libraries Change Live sign in the background there. I feel like also kind of like how this always changes, always the backgrounds. I feel like the meaning behind that always changes. There's a different way to convey how libraries change lives. So before we get into the project, is there anything that you would like to say as of like 2026, how you're finding that the library system is changing lives?
Thank you for asking, Connor, because I do think it's, you know, different for everyone. As people think about what the library means to them, sometimes it's just they like to drive by it in their community and know it's there for others. But there's so many people who rely on it from a day-to-day basis, who really, as they have faced down the affordability crisis, are thinking about, how am I going to pay for things in my life? And when they know they can get their entertainment, their education, quality experiences for their kids at the library without paying out of pocket at the point of experience, it really enhances the quality of life for so many people across the Hudson Valley. So I think some of the new things we're seeing people really focused on is, you know, watching this big trend of almost all government services have to be accessed through a website. So gone are the days of just walking into an office and maybe hoping that someone's going to be there to help you. There's longer lines, there's less offices. And so our library staff are really stepping up to help people navigate those new websites, processes. There's still people out there who don't have an email address and they're turning to their library to get help with that type of thing. So It's been an interesting few years, but I think we're seeing more and more people drawn to their library in recent years.
Absolutely. What was that? I was just at, oh, forgive me, it's the one in Wappingers Falls there, Grinnell Library?
Grinnell. Yeah.
Oh, Grinnell. There you go. Sorry, I'm butchering the pronunciation. Yeah. But I was over there. I was in between meetings and I just needed a place to work. I had my laptop with me. And not only did I randomly get to catch up with some old friends who I didn't know who were working there. Shout out Audrey. I also, just as I'm overhearing everything as I'm working, they were talking about how there are projects like to help with media literacy, to help with computer literacy, to help people who aren't all that tech savvy. There are a number of people at the computers. There are a number of people checking out books. There were classes going on. I think there was some kind of dance class happening in the basement. And it's like, it's so many things. When you think library, you think quiet. Technically, yes, the decibel level was low, but there was a lot going on.
Yeah, I think our libraries are really dynamic places, and there's something for everyone. You know, if you're someone who likes to just be quiet and read or need a quiet spot to think through something, most of our libraries can provide that. But the variety of resources, it's not just about the collection of stuff anymore. It's about education, entertainment, and really connecting with your neighbors, which is, I think, a really huge and growing hallmark of what libraries are offering, which is this gathering place for people to come together and learn together, problem solve together. If you're new to the community, it's where you're often making some of your first connections in your neighborhood. So it's really an exciting time for libraries.
I agree. I think it's great. And especially like this time of year too, with, you know, spring and summer coming along the way. I know that there are like summer reading lists for the kids, of course, but then different activities that are going to be popping up. There's going to be a lot of great things, but there's also going to be this traveling, could I call it an exhibit in a way? Yeah. I guess it is an exhibit, right? Yeah. But this traveling exhibit, the Tempestry Project, and there's a lot of cool things that are going on around it, like all the years that have led up to it, all the people who've been a part of it and now showcasing it. So that being said, let's get into it. It's like, what exactly is this Tempestry Project?
Yeah, so this is really born out of, the Mid-Hudson Library System is the first library system in the world to be certified under what's called the Sustainable Library Certification Program. And part of our kind of journey through that was really understanding the need for all of us, regardless of what your job title is or your role in your life, to understand your responsibility in the face of climate change. And so as libraries, we see ourselves as educators, but as you were just noting, we're much more than that, right? We're places for people to kind of realize their potential and pursue their hobbies and learn together, which is really exciting to me. So I was at an event in Kingston about, I guess it was 2.5 years ago, where this group called the Tempestry Project was doing a little, they were tabling at the event, and they had maybe six of these, what I thought were scarves, were knitted and hanging. And I'm looking at these things and I'm like, something else is going on here. So I went to talk to them. And the two wonderful people who work for, actually they work over at Vassar, which is just down the street from my office. So it was super fun to meet them in a different environment. But what they were doing was taking data, temperature data, and then knitting it into these what looks like scarves, what they call tempestries, which is a new word. It's the combination of temperature and tempestry. So that's how we get to tempestries. And what it was doing was really showing change over time, which if you take a long enough view can show you how much climate change has changed, how the world feels to us from a temperature perspective here in the Hudson Valley. And I was getting more and more excited about what they were doing. And they mentioned, Ozzy mentioned that, you know, oh, we've got one of the largest data sets in the country, but I don't know how we would ever find enough knitters to do it. And I said, well, how many? And she's like, well, we've got data going back since from 1895, so 130 years. She goes, I don't know where we're going to get 130 knitters. And I said, well, I know where you're going to get 130 knitters because our libraries have tons of fiber arts groups either convened at their library or people who just find each other and decide to knit together at their libraries. And honestly, we put the call out and it was less than a week and a half. We had 130 volunteers to knit each of those tempestries for each year of climate data that we had.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. In such a short period of time, you know, there's a lot of people that I talk to lately that say that it's very hard to get people engaged in just about anything these days. And that could be for a variety of reasons, whether that's, post-COVID world, that's thinking of people don't want to get out of their houses. They're working, they're doing everything online these days. It's hard to engage. Here you are getting 130 people to engage in this project in about a week's time. Incredible. And also, can I just say, I'm screwing up the pronunciation left and right, tempestry. I got the accent wrong the first time. It's all good. But this is really cool. So 130 years of this. So I can only imagine, I haven't seen anything yet. I've only read up on this, but you know, I can only imagine what that must look like going from left to right, seeing how that all changes. Again, you know, hopefully by the time this is airing, people are going to be seeing images on the screen, but how would you describe the look of it?
Yeah, so if you imagine a scarf hanging vertically and there's 365 lines of knitted material and they're gradiated by color based on how warm or cool that day was in that year. So when you look at the tempestry for 1909, you're going to see that the color represents how cold it was on January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, right through the end of the year. And then when you line up all the years next to each other, you can see at a glance how much hotter summers are now. Not that you didn't have a hot day or four in 1909. But now you're going to see, like in 2024, there was probably five times as many really hot days over the 90 degree mark. You can also see the winters getting warmer over time. And so while you might not realize that as someone who's just living your daily life, when you take that retrospective look back at the data in this knit format, which is really an art form, it's really evident very quickly. You can see the change over time. And I think, you know, people often confuse, you know, temperature with climate data. And so making it very accessible to the layperson who's not a climate scientist or not studying climate policy to just at a glance to be able to see this data in a visual format that's very accessible, that's made by your neighbors with data that was collected right here in the Hudson Valley. There's just so many perfect parts of this project. And if I could just share what was really exciting to me once I saw it all together, excuse me.
Good.
Was the stories behind each year. So each knitter chose their year.
Interesting.
And then we would ask people, why did you pick your year? That was just the cherry on top of the experience, was to hear people say, well, that was the year my parents got married, or my first child was born that year. Here's what I remember about being pregnant during that summer. Like, it was just fabulous to hear the individual stories layered over the local data and then produced in this beautiful art format, which is, you know, sometimes work that doesn't get the respect it deserves. So it's very cool.
Oh, wow. So when it comes to the stories as to why people chose them, obviously here you are, you're, you know, very much a part of this whole project. You're helping to run it. You're hearing the stories. But is there a way for the general public to be able to check out some of these stories as well?
Yeah, we're going to be loading them on the website, which I'll send you to make sure you have to couple with the recording of our conversation. What we did, it's actually kind of funny because some people were just very modest. Oh, this was, you know, the year I got married, or this was the year my local library was founded. And other people wrote a little story about what that year meant to them. And then they also took the opportunity sometimes to complain about how tough the stitch was. So we left that coupled with their story because we found that funny.
Oh, absolutely. Which actually brings up a question that I was having. That's 365 different like stitches. I don't know how knitting works, but that's different levels of all of it. The craft, the patience, the skill that has to go into all that. And the fact that you were lucky enough to get 130 people who were qualified and good enough and talented enough to do something like this. That's impressive.
It's really impressive, Connor. And these are all hobbyists. They're people who just picked up knitting along the way in their life. A lot of them shared with us they learned from their mom or their grandma. All but one were knit by women. So it's a traditionally female art form that I think, again, isn't often elevated sometimes in daily life. So to see it put at this stature in a collective, a lot of folks said they'd never had their work exhibited before. So it was really lovely to celebrate them at our opening reception, thank them for what they helped us produce together. But really, like I said, it blew our minds that it only took a week and a half to find the people to do this. And honestly, we were turning people away. I think we could have done it twice over. We had so much interest in the project. So, and these people were so into it that at the opening reception, the most frequent question I got was, what's next? What are we going to do together next?
Yeah. Well, is there an idea for what's next?
I got to get through this first, Connor. We got this 18-month traveling exhibit, so I'm doing my best to get that organized, but I really hope we can find something else to engage people because, like you said, you know, people coming out of their homes to participate in something that's kind of larger than themselves gives people a sense of community, and they feel less isolated, and I think that's really important in today's world. So really, you know, find ways to lessen our anxiety about each other, to feel part of your community. We have to help people connect with those opportunities, and this was just a small way to do that, because as you noted, you know, how people want to volunteer today might look different than it did 10 years ago, and people need opportunities that fit their lifestyle. So if they can do a discreet, smaller task that also fits into one of their hobbies, that's like a win-win for everyone.
Big time. That's a great way of looking at it. I love the perspective there. So as you said, this is going to be like an 18-month long exhibition here, and it's going to be, you know, presented at a variety of the libraries all throughout the library system. I don't know if you know the schedule offhand or want to look it up real quick. Could you tell us, like, what is that going to look like? Where can people go to experience this?
So this is exciting to me because it encourages people to visit libraries they might not have been to before. Like most people are, they at least know where their local library is and hopefully have been inside and accesses the services. But this is an excuse maybe to go visit some other libraries. So that's pretty cool. So the next 18 months will be in 8 different libraries across all 5 counties. So as I know you know, but your listeners may not know, the Mid-Hudson Library System covers 5 counties. We're in Columbia, Greene, Dutchess, Ulster, and Putnam County. We have 71 buildings across that area. So this is a select number of where people can find it, and we'll have the full schedule on the website that I give you that can be linked to the program here. But right now it's at the Hyde Park Library, and it's a limited selection because that space couldn't fit all 130. But then we're going to our second largest building down in Putnam County, which is the Mayapack, or I believe at the locals call it Mahopac Library, which has a wonderful art gallery. So they'll have the entire collection there in that building, which is really cool. We're going to be going to the Olive Library in Ulster County, which is, I think, a hidden gem for a lot of people in Ulster County who don't realize it's not only a library, but it's a local history museum. Mm-hmm. So they'll also have this exhibit, which is fabulous. We're going to the Elting Library in New Paltz, the Claverack Library up in Columbia County, as well as the Hudson Library, which will have it for Earth Day 2027. And that's a really cool building to visit because it's a former armory. And for folks here in Dutchess County, it looks an awful lot like the armory we have here in Poughkeepsie, but it has cooler turrets. So it looks more like a castle to people. So it's a pretty cool space to have a library.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. That just the history nerd within me is like, yeah, I want to check that out. That's awesome. And also kudos to you for remembering all the places. Very, very good. That's fantastic. So it's going to be traveling around. It's an excuse for people to be able to go out and to experience this the entire way through. So impressive. And when you said how, like with the Hyde Park one, it doesn't have the whole space to be able to do all that. Is it going to be, how do I want to word that? Are majority of the places big enough to be able to hold the whole thing, or are they going to be broken up as well?
After Hyde Park, the other locations will have the entire collection. So we did a quick kind of turnaround between our opening reception and then having it at Hyde Park. Mm-hmm. They had four people from their town help out with the project. So we wanted to make sure they at least had their tempestries and a couple of examples from each decade. So you can still see the change over time. But we wanted to make sure that the four from Hyde Park were particularly spotlighted.
Oh, that's cool. I love that. And hey, that's like my hometown library. Sure, nice. I grew up in Poughkeepsie, but I went to Hyde Park schools. I went to the Hyde Park Library more often than I ever went to a Poughkeepsie one, at least growing up. And gosh, how many years did I intern doing sound for the open mic there? Definitely at least most of high school and a little bit of college. So yeah, that place is near and dear to my heart. So that's cool it gets a start there. That's neat.
So you know Greg, you must know Greg Callahan,
the
director, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Greg, he signed all my papers back in high school for my internship, making sure that I got everything set, my volunteer hours. Yeah, no, Greg was always fantastic and always appreciated any kind of work that he was able to get me involved on. And it really helped me, you know, build and hone a lot of the skills and knowledge that I have today. So shout out to Greg. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah. And they just did a little renovation of the Hyde Park Library. So it's worth stopping by if you haven't been there in a while.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think it's really cool. I've seen it. But for anybody else who hasn't seen that yet, it's definitely worth checking out. That's awesome. So we've talked about how many years that the data is representing, but I don't think we've talked about how long it actually took all these knitters to be able to put this all together. I would imagine, I'm not into knitting. I don't quite understand it. I respect it. It's incredible, but I don't know how to do it myself. How long did this take?
You know, each knitter went on their own journey, Connor. Some folks flew right through it. We got a few back in just a few weeks. I would say most people, it took them 4 to 5 months to knit it.
Okay.
Some people did it in a round, meaning they did it in a group. So sometimes there was like four knitters that contributed to one piece.
Oh, cool.
By the end of last year, I would say we had about 75 back, and we had 101 back on the year anniversary of when we announced the project, which was Earth Day last year. So, you know, everyone took their time, did what they could. Some people, you know, got partway through and said, this isn't for me. And someone else picked up the slack. So we had this wonderful group at the Poughkeepsie Public Library. They were my, I call them my angels because they did four of the unfinished ones and got them into the exhibit, which was awesome. So there was no judgment, you know, hey, if it wasn't for you and you switched it over to someone else, we called them our saviors, our angels, helped out with that. So like I said, I think most people took around 4 to 5 months.
Okay, gotcha. I'm just curious. That's very interesting. And to think of like, this isn't something that happens overnight. This is something that, you know, even you have all these hundreds of hands, you know, it's still going to take some time. And hey, that's probably good for the people that you said, like, you know, you had an abundance of people. People were able to probably able to step in and continue something on. That's a great way of building upon the collaboration, which I think is only a testament to the community that the library system really holds up to.
Yeah. And like you, Connor, like I'm not a knitter, but I was so excited about this project. I wanted to kind of own the tempestries for the year the Mid-Hudson Library System was founded. So I sponsored a kit and one of my own trustees actually knit it. And then I sponsored a kit to commemorate the year my parents got married. And a knitter I've never even met offered to knit that for me. So it was, you know, people, even folks who weren't knitters, got a chance to help make this happen, which was really lovely.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
When we talk about mental health, we often focus on the symptoms, anxiety, depression, isolation. But what we don't talk about nearly enough is the root cause. And more often than not, that root cause is trauma. This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at Mental Health America of Dutchess County. Trauma doesn't always look dramatic. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's an experience you've carried alone for years. Sometimes you've never spoken about it because it feels shameful or because you were told to just move on. But here's the truth. Holding a painful secret doesn't protect you. It weighs on you. It shapes how you think, how you feel, and how you move through the world. It can impact relationships and jobs, the way you attach to people and interpersonal friendships and work relationships, and you don't have to keep carrying that weight by yourself. Healing is possible when you finally feel safe enough to talk about it. Contact a therapist today. If you need help with that process, contact your primary care physician or call MHA of Dutchess County. We're happy to help you find someone. It's time to take care of yourself. You just may have the best year of your life.
For 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community. Because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free Hot Wax and Shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation. Foam and Wash Car Wash,
home of the Unlimited Wash membership.
Thank you for being part of FOMO Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
This episode is also sponsored by Juniors 2. Come on out to Juniors 2 in Poughkeepsie, New York for Thursday Night Trivia, hosted by CMJW Entertainment. Play as a team as you work your way through four rounds of trivia categories in order to win gift certificates and other prizes. Juniors 2 Trivia Nights, every Thursday starting at 7 p.m. at 1126 Dutchess Turnpike, Poughkeepsie.
Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
In 1 year, I went from unemployed making videos in my family room to becoming a top 40 under 40 honoree, gaining hundreds of thousands of views. And I'm just getting started. It's time for the second annual Walsh Wednesday Fun Drive. It's Connor coming at you once again, and what better day to launch the second annual Fun Drive than to do it on National Connor's Day? Seriously, that's a thing, not some April Fool's prank. Guys, 2025 was such a transformative year here at Walsh Wednesday, and I'm so excited to see what 2026 has to offer. Over the span of the last 60 plus episodes, not only have we gotten to speak with local leaders and creators, but we worked with platinum selling artists, Broadway veterans, Hollywood actors, banana ball players, and even Olympians. Because of the hard work from this past year, Walsh Wednesday is once again nominated for Best Podcast, part of Hudson Valley Magazine's Best of Hudson Valley. None of this would be possible without you, so thank you. You can help Walsh Wednesday continue to grow by donating to our GoFundMe and by voting for Walsh Wednesday for Best Podcast. Both links can be found in the description of this episode. And if you don't have the funds to donate at this time, that's fine. I totally get it. Just sharing alone goes such a long way. We got some really cool plans for 2026. As you've seen, we've recently launched our trivia spinoff, Walsh Whiteboards, which honestly has been a blast to film. Not just that, we're hoping to go on the road more often to show you incredible sights, stories, exhibits, and more that can't be captured in the studio. From the bottom of my heart, I greatly appreciate you for believing in what Walsh Wednesday is and what it will become. Connor Walsh signing off for Walsh Wednesday on National Connor's Day. And as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. So you're able to sponsor things at that time, but I'm just curious now, is there any way that the community can help sponsor, help donate, or just add to what's currently going on right now?
Thank you for asking that, because I think the best thing that can happen is that people come to see the exhibit. Mm-hmm. Come and experience it. You know, come to see the artistry of your neighbors who helped to put this together, and maybe get a broader view of what climate change is doing in the Hudson Valley. You know, as we see the temperatures rising at a steadier pace, and what you can see at a glance in the Tempestry exhibit is that the summers are getting hotter, right? The heat waves are getting longer. And this is super dangerous for people's health, as well as increasing the threat of wildfires. Those are two major issues that we're faced with here in the Hudson Valley. And I think more people that understand that's a larger threat in our area, the more educated we are about that, maybe the more people will be willing to help out with their local volunteer fire departments, or to make sure there's a cooling center in their neighborhood for folks who don't have air conditioning. You know, these are the kinds of reasons that we work on this topic, as well as what people assume we work on, because we're all in this together. And for people to understand that we're going to have to care for one another at a higher level in the face of climate change is something that a lot of us are working on here in the Hudson Valley. And so this is just another entry point for people to maybe wrap their minds around that and see what it means for them. So I think the biggest way people can help is to come to that exhibit, spread the word about it, help more people connect with that data and the art that was put together by neighbors who really cared.
Mm, absolutely. And you definitely got me wanting to check that all out. I think that would be great. One thing about the
One thing about the Hudson Valley in particular when it comes to climate, and something that I found very interesting, is despite how beautiful the Hudson Valley is, it's actually one of the worst places with people for allergies. And as the, you know, as temperatures rise and we have these greater heat waves, actually the harder and harder it is on people. So when you have people who are having these allergies and pre-existing health conditions, this is not an easy place for people. You know, they say people go out to Arizona when they need like drier air. This is not a place for dry air. You have the river, you have the valleys, you have the trees, you have all of that. And again, despite how beautiful it is, it can be a lot on a person's health. So it's more than just simply looking at it as like, it's a little warmer outside. That's affecting people's health. That's affecting agriculture. That's affecting day-to-day. That's affecting tourism, economy, all of that.
Right.
Everything plays a part. And I also just want to say libraries are a great climate-controlled area for people who are trying to escape that area, because most are very well AC'd and climate-controlled and all that. So just to plug in that case, just wanted to bring that up. But based on the holistic concept of it all, that it's more than just, temperatures are rising,
right,
how it affects everything. Do you have any comment on that, of how it's all interconnected?
100%. You know, when I mentioned we were certified as a sustainable library system a few years ago, that was the whole idea, was to really understand all these kind of interconnected choices that we make over time and how that contributes to both the situation of climate change, but also how we're going to adapt in the face of it. Because for our generation, even making really smart choices right now, we're not going to turn the tide on what's happening for the next 30 years, even if we did everything right. So our job right now is to come together and adapt in the face of these changes that we're now faced with. So you're really helping to our libraries. That's been a big part of what we've been doing the past 7 years, is to help them see how their infrastructure might be a part of the solution in some of our communities. We have almost every single one of our 71 buildings is now a cooling center and listed with the New York State Department of Health. We're just starting now to talk about being air quality havens. In the light of what we saw with the Canadian wildfire smoke coming into the Hudson Valley, that was really unnerving for a lot of people whose eyes were opened up to what the future might hold, and seeing even lower air quality than we've had in the past. And we have 7 of our libraries have partnered with Bard College to have what they call purple air quality monitors on our library buildings, so we can get more localized air quality data. Because like you said, here in the Hudson Valley, we're usually relying on data from either New York City or Albany, and we need data that's more specific to the Hudson Valley. So the library infrastructure of facilities is playing some really interesting roles as we confront those realities. But I got to say, with all the reading and learning I've done on this topic, what I think is going to be absolutely key to the future is people being able to have more empathy, respect, and understanding for each other. And being willing to understand that while your home may be, you know, a great air quality haven, there's an awful lot of people in your community where that is not the case, where they don't have transportation to go up to the Catskills to escape something, or down to Arizona to figure that out, right? They're going to be living in it, regardless of their health situation. So, you know, again, empathy for others is something we're really focused on. And our libraries do a really good job of promoting through their collections and the programs they do to help more people connect with the lived experiences with others, so that you understand that you might be having a different experience than other people in your community, but you all deserve to have a good quality of life moving forward, which is totally achievable if we work together.
Beautifully said. Oh my gosh, Rebecca, fantastic. It just goes to show, again, have the community, have everybody come together. And you're right, there is an empathy crisis going on. I think that's 100% a thing. And that leads to what I wanted to say next with it. We've mentioned how this entire project did not happen overnight. We're looking at 130 years of data. Then when this project came together, it took 4 or 5 months for people to put this together. Then you're going to have 18 months of displaying this. And it's going to be through those 18 months that people discover and learn more about it. They're not going to find out on the very first day, and that's it. I think that just goes to show you, nothing happens overnight. And even as you said, if we did everything environmentally correct for the next 30 years, could we really change everything completely? How much time it's going to take? So based on the time element and the empathy element, what do you have to say? Do you have like any kind of like message or call to action to people out there who are, any kind of call to action to anybody out there, just to ensure to them, it's like, hey, this takes time and it takes hands. It takes people to do this.
Yeah, I talk a lot about this topic around the world. I get invited to speak all over the world on this topic. And the thing that I always bring it back to is a feeling of real distinct hope. Because what I see is people rising to the occasion. You know, you can see it on the news when there's maybe a catastrophic weather event, like a hurricane or a wildfire. People come out of the woodwork to help each other. And I think our job is to help people behave like that more on a daily basis. So we start to think about kind of the enormity of climate change and how systematically complex the causes are, and you know, how much money and time it's going to take to really fully adapt in the face of all of that. The truth is a lot of people are already working on this and doing good work. But it also takes all of us to take responsibility. And I think that's where kind of our job is to help, you know, wake people up or help them connect with information that's helpful to their lives and also connect them with opportunities to help. Because there's so many people in the Hudson Valley doing good work on these topics. You know, I've been thinking a lot about our volunteer fire departments. I know I mentioned them earlier, but you know, in the Hudson Valley, there's a really high number of fire departments that are totally reliant on our volunteer firefighters. And when you look at the beautiful nature that surrounds us is also a fuel for wildfires. So when you start to think about the declining number of people willing to volunteer with the increasing likelihood of some problems on that front, we've got to recalibrate and balance on that. So I think people, you know, the Rojan Library up in Columbia County just held a volunteer fair to help more people connect with the organizations that need more help. And so I think raising the visibility of the good organizations and the good people of our communities who are doing this work and showing people how you can get involved at a level that's comfortable for your own life. I don't want people feeling like guilty, like, oh, well, I can't be a volunteer firefighter. It's like, oh, well, maybe you could be part of the auxiliary, or you could do a little fundraising for them, or you could help get the word out that volunteers are needed, right? We all just have to do what we can. And to just recognize we're all doing our best. But it does require a little more, I think, attention to the issue moving forward. But I do hope people are living in hope on this topic. It is not all doom and gloom. There's so much good work happening at the state and local level. And our libraries are part of that, which is super, I think, gratifying and exciting for me.
It is an exciting time. I think that's great. I love the idea of like a volunteer fair. That's a great way of being able to find things that relate to you and get out there, because I find that so many people out there are always like, there's nothing to do. What can I do around here? And it's like, just shove it right in people's faces, have everything presentable. So I like that. That's very, very cool. So Rebecca, we're getting towards the end of this episode, and I know this episode has kind of, we've encapsulated this throughout it, but kind of more in summary right now, as we close up and kind of like put a little bow on things, how do you feel that this Tempestry project is really fitting the morals and values of the Mid-Hudson Library System?
So a couple of our core values intersect with this project. And you know, one is a commitment to be good stewards of the environment, which is something that everyone needs to embrace, because we're all making decisions that use up natural resources and leave a footprint for the choices that we make. And that's something our board really committed itself to over 7 years ago. And the other thing we're really interested in is being future focused, to not just kind of tread water where we are, but to really get ahead of what we can see coming to help both our libraries be successful and help the libraries help our communities thrive in the face of what's coming. So I think this project really, it just hit so many of our goals in terms of helping people come together to do a collaborative project. You know, you were talking before about folks saying, oh, there's nothing to do, which can sometimes lead to folks just sitting at home and not connecting with others. And so I think I'm really interested in some of the work that's being done to increase social capital in our communities, to get more people connected to each other, understanding what we all bring to the table, and really increasing our quality of life by being more community-minded. So this project allowed people to come out of their homes or maybe knit in their homes where their introvert mind might be more comfortable, but then come out and be part of something larger, which is super exciting to see. And I think it's a beautiful kind of visual that you're knitting this data, but you're also knitting a community closer together by collaborating on this art project, by having a traveling exhibit that more people can come and learn from. And now everyone is part of being that educator in our community as well as an artisan, which is really a lovely thing to see people's work celebrated. And I think that dignity and respect that we show to people who do good work in our communities is a big part of how we build ourselves up.
Mm, well said. I got to say a couple of things that you brought up there, especially with the human capital of it all. You know, everybody's so worried about having the financial funds. And of course, you know, that's needed. But when you have the human capital, when you have that out there, you'll be amazed about what you can do. Resources does not mean money. Resources means taking advantage of everything that you have around you and accessible to you, including the people in your community. And I think that is huge. Pretty much everything that we talked about today kind of goes to the adage. I wish I can remember who exactly said this, but planting the tree
knowing that you'll never get to experience the shade, but you're planting it for somebody else. 100% that. We have to be looking ahead to the legacy that we are leaving behind. And I feel like legacy has been such a huge topic on Welsh Wednesday lately. That is the legacy of the Mid-Hudson Library System. And hopefully we can make it the legacy of the Hudson Valley as a whole. So Rebecca, as we're wrapping this whole episode up, I can't speak today. I am so sorry. As we're wrapping this all up, is there any last little nugget or call to action that you want to leave this episode with?
Well, first, I'd just like to publicly thank the Tempestry Project founders, Emily and Ozzy, who are just such wonderful people. I want to give them a shout out in particular because they didn't just come up with this idea and facilitate it for us. They've made so many good choices along the way, down to where they source the yarn from. They wanted to make sure it was made in America, that it was dyed with non-toxic dyes. Like, the thoughtfulness and care they put into their kits is just phenomenal. And you can go on their website. Anyone can knit a Tempestry. You didn't miss your chance. So if you're a knitter and you're psyched about this, you can go and get your own kit and do it yourself from their website. It's very, very cool. Senator Michelle Hinchey helped us fund the traveling exhibit. You know, people, like I said, came out of the woodwork, but the folks I want to thank the most are the knitters themselves, who really took some time out of their life to be, again, part of something larger than themselves, which I think is just so beautiful and something we need to see more of here in the Hudson Valley. But I'm most proud of our libraries, who, when I said, can we do this? They said, hell yeah. So like I said, a week and a half, 130 knitters, those were all recruited by our local libraries, which really speaks to how embedded they are, how well they know the people that they serve, and recognizing this was a good project to bring to life and through our libraries, which we're so proud of.
Yeah, it's a great way to blend art and science together and hopefully lead to something really productive for this area. Rebecca, again, I got to say thank you. And seriously, thank you for being on not just this episode, but previous episodes. I think you're such a great speaker. You're so captivating. You are very... you are perfect for the job that you have because it takes a certain kind of person to, one, not only be as knowledgeable as you are, but being able to pull it out at a moment's notice. And it's like, oh, let me check on this, let me check on that. It's like, no, you have all the information there. You are such a great steward for the Mid-Hudson Library Project. And I got to say, it's always a pleasure having you on because I know that it's always going to be a high-end, top-tier episode because you are a top-tier guest and speaker. So, Rebecca, thank you.
Connor, you're so lovely to say that. I appreciate your kind words, but it takes two, right? So thanks for being such a great host. You always do your homework. You come with great energy and you do great work for the community. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Much appreciated, Rebecca. Now to all of you out there, if you want to check out the Tempestry Project, see, I'm still doing it. If you want to check out the project, we're going to have links in the description of this episode so you can follow along. You can learn more. You can read up on these stories. If you want to get a kit yourself, look into it. We're going to make sure that it's accessible to all of you guys. And who knows, maybe you'll be watching or listening to this episode at one of the libraries in and around the area. We should do that at some point. We should have some kind of like incentive to do that. We'll talk about that. We'll make that work. But for you guys out there, make sure that you follow along and learn as much as you can. The Mid-Hudson Library System has a lot going on, especially going into the spring and summer. You're going to have a lot of fun with it. Rebecca, again, thank you so much for being here. And I'm really excited for whatever's next for all of us.
Cool. Thanks so much, Connor. I really appreciate you.
Of course. I'm Connor.
I'm Rebecca.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, MHA of Dutchess County, Foam & Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Locksav Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman Kleiman Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon.